I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to Preconceived, where we examine the preconceptions that shape how we view the world and the paradigms by which we live our lives.
Hey everybody, I'm Zale Mednick, and welcome to a special combined episode of Preconceived and Blindspot. So for those of you who don't know, and there's no reason you would know, I run two podcasts. I've run Preconceived for the past 5 years, but my day job is as an ophthalmologist, and I figured last year I might as well blend my two interests of podcasting and ophthalmology, and I also started an ophthalmology podcast. And for those who don't know what an ophthalmologist is, that's an eye doctor. So today's topic is going to be on the solar eclipse. So for those of you listeners to Blindspot, I thought this would be a relevant topic because we've got a lot of patients asking us what's going on with this solar eclipse, what do I need to be aware of, what exactly is a solar eclipse, how can I damage my eye, what do I need to do to prevent it. And then for my Preconceived listeners, I thought this would be an area of interest too, because you're all, in theory, the patients who might be coming in with questions about what is the solar eclipse. And it was a chance to, a rare chance to use my ophthalmology knowledge on Preconceived. So thank you to listeners of Preconceived and Blindspot for tuning into this episode to chat about the solar eclipse. I'm recording this episode on Wednesday night, April 3rd, and the solar eclipse is scheduled to happen on April 8th. And I'm going to be speaking with an ophthalmologist today who's going to walk us through what exactly the solar eclipse is, why it can cause retinal damage, eye damage, what we need to watch out for, what we should be counseling people as people, what you should be aware of. Have things gone a little bit too far in terms of shutting down schools and people not going to work? What is all of the truth behind some of the noise that's out there? So I am joined today by Dr. Tina Filfelli. She is a resident physician in the Department of Ophthalmology and Vision Sciences at University of Toronto. She completed her medical school training at University of Toronto, where she received the J.P. Bulley Prize in Ophthalmology for the highest academic standing in her graduating class. She recently completed a PhD degree in clinical epidemiology at the Institute of Health Policy, Management and Evaluation as part of the Integrated Physician Scientist Program. Amongst her many achievements, she is a Vanier Scholar, which is awarded by the Government of Canada to world-class doctoral students. She has also been awarded the Fighting Blindness Canada Clinician Scientist Emerging Leaders Award. She's the author of the Toronto Guide to Clinical Ophthalmology, which is a textbook used in the ophthalmology curriculum for medical students at University of Toronto. She has an impressive research and publication record with several first author journal publications. She's presented her research at numerous national and international conferences, sciences. Her research interests include population-based studies, economic evaluations, and prediction models for outcomes of surgical retinal disease and uveitis, the evaluation of healthcare delivery within the fields of ophthalmology. Dr. Tina Fofelli, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Dr. Mednick, for organizing this wonderful podcast that's beneficial to both ophthalmologists, but also patients, and for inviting me to speak about an exciting event that's coming up that most people are talking about these days.
Well, my pleasure. The pleasure is all mine. I'm laughing because you called me Dr. Mednick. And as I said at the beginning, I've never recorded a joint podcast for Blind Spot and Preconceived. And on Preconceived, I don't think anybody's even called me that, even in Blind Spot. So we'll go with Zale and Tina. So I'm really excited to record this because, like I said, I haven't done an episode for both podcasts because it's rare that these two worlds would blend. But on the one hand, the audience of Preconceived is kind of like the patients who are wondering, what do I need to know about the solar eclipse? And the audience for Blind Spot is the people who are telling the patients what you need to know about the solar eclipse. I myself am more naive about this topic than I should be, perhaps. I don't know tons about it other than some basic stuff, I guess. So we're going to dial it back from the beginning. And we're just going to start off with, Tina, what is a solar eclipse, basically, without getting too much into the physics of it?
Yeah, great. Yeah, so a solar eclipse usually occurs when the sun, the moon, and the earth, and the most kind of basic senses line up. And this can be either fully or partially, and that's what refers to the partial eclipse or a total solar eclipse. And so depending how they align, these eclipses can provide a very unique and exciting view of either the sun and the moon. And in parts of the world, based on your geographic location, as the moon passes between the sun and the earth, it can create a shadow on the earth that's either, again, fully or partially, and can actually result in full blockage of the sunlight. And in midday, it can appear as night because all of the sun rays are fully blocked. And so it's quite an extraordinary experience. It doesn't happen very often. The last total eclipse that we had in Canada was actually all the way back in 1979. And the next one that's expected to take place is the next partial eclipse in Toronto. It's going to be in 2029. And total solar eclipses in Toronto is expected to be in 2144. And so
wow, we'll be very dead by then.
Hopefully the podcasts are going on by then still. But, you know, a lot of people are super excited about this because it's a rare event and there's a lot of talk about it. Schools are being canceled. Things are being scheduled around this. There's a lot of tourism happening. Even prices in Niagara Falls hotels have gone up because it's one of the best places to view this. So there's a lot surrounding this kind of April 8th total solar eclipse that's coming up. And so, of course, with that, there's a lot of questions about safety and how do we protect our eyes during this kind of extraordinary event that's about to take place.
Wow. So I didn't realize how rare that was. So this is pretty exciting. And as you said, obviously, a lot of people are tuning into this because they're excited, but they're also concerned about their eyes. My understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure I'm missing part of the picture here. My understanding is that because the moon is going to be blocking the sun, you look at it and you think, wow, that's really cool. But usually when you look at the sun, you have a reflex where you look away because it's too bright for you to look at the sun. But if the moon is blocking it, you're not necessarily going to have that same reflex to look away because your eyes aren't in pain from looking at the sun. Kind of like putting your hand on a stove, but not realizing that it's hot. And then if you were to take your hand off, your hand's burnt. Same way that you could sustain retinal damage. Retina is at the back of the eye if you're looking at the sun for too long when it's not painful. Is that the gist of it?
Yeah. And that's actually, for the most part, I would say it's correct. So, you know, some people mistakenly believe that if you look at a total solar eclipse, which is going to happen on April 8th, that it's safe because the moon is completely blocking the sunlight. And so most people understand that looking directly on the sun, it's not safe. You year round, we wear UV blocking sunglasses to protect your eyes from the damage from UV light that can cause retinal damage. And some of that can be permanent. And so on this kind of particular event, you know, people believe that because the sun rays are completely blocked, that it's safe to actually look at the solar eclipse. But that's not true. And the reason for that is that a total solar eclipse, meaning the light rays from the sun being completely blocked by the moon, it's actually very, very short-lived. It's only about 90 seconds, and it can be even shorter depending on your geographic location. In certain areas, they actually never get a total solar eclipse. And so unless someone is 100% certain that they're viewing the sun in totality of a solar eclipse, and this totality of an eclipse is a very short-lived phenomenon, you're always at risk of damaging your eyes. And so the kind of safest thing to tell your patients that is that it's never, never safe to look at a solar eclipse with a naked eye, unless you're wearing specialized eclipse glasses, which are not your typical sunglasses. Sunglasses are not protective. Looking at it indirectly through your phone or through a telescope or any sort of other binoculars that do not have proper filters will still cause damage to your eyes. And that's really important to reiterate to our patients, because the complications that we worry about are solar retinopathy, which can actually be permanent damage to the retina, and patients can have lifelong scotomas, blurred vision, distorted vision, other altered color vision, etc., and light sensitivity as a result of this damage.
So basically, unless you are confident, which nobody would be, that they're viewing it in that 90 seconds of totality when the sun is completely blocked, the odds are when you're viewing the eclipse, some of that sunlight is going to be getting through. You're not going to be feeling it necessarily because it is blocked to an extent. So you'll be looking at it, but it will be causing damage and you won't have that same. Is that aspect I said about you won't have the same reflex? Is that an appropriate way of thinking of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the, you know, we have a hard time looking at the sun when it's in full, kind of not fully blocked. Usually most people know to not look at the sun because it's very uncomfortable. But during those kind of few seconds where it's partially blocked, it is easier for people to look at it, but you're still getting lots of sun rays that are still damaging to the eyes. And so as the moon is continuing to move across the sun, as the total eclipse is ending, the bright sunlight suddenly appears. And so by the time people react or kind of have that recognition, it's already, you know, the damage has already been caused. And so it can only take a few seconds for the retina to be damaged. And it's been well documented in the literature that there's a thought that there's some sort of a photochemical toxicity and thermal injury from the short wavelength visible light from near infrared radiation that happens during sun gazing. And that can permanently damage the photoreceptors in the retina. And in particular, the macula, which is the central part of your vision, responsible for your kind of refined vision. And so you can imagine as a patient, if you have a black spot in the central part of your vision, and this can be permanent, that could be quite troubling for some people to have to live with that, especially because we don't have any treatment for solar retinopathy.
So you mentioned that term solar retinopathy, and ophthalmologists and optometrists listening to that know what that is, but to the general layperson who doesn't, as you just explained, Tina, the retina at the back of the eye, that's the tissue that is really responsible for our vision. And when light connects with the retina, that's what's responsible for our vision. But if the light damages it, especially in the macula, which is the part that's responsible for our central vision, as you said, that can cause something called solar retinopathy. So you said that can happen after just several seconds of directly staring at the sun. Would somebody know right away that that's happened, or would it take a little bit of time typically for the solar retinopathy, for that damage that's been done to the retina, to present symptomatically for a patient?
Yeah, and that's a great question, and that can be quite variable. So some people may notice it after only a few minutes or to a few hours. For some people, it may take a little bit longer. And again, the recovery of it is also very different. The degree of the effect is also very different. There's been some suggestion that in particular, children or younger people are more susceptible to it. And there's different hypotheses. So maybe they have, you know, they're more likely to be unsupervised and look at sun gaze without recognizing the effects of it, and also because they have clear optics, so they have a very clear lens. They have a very clear cornea. And so if you think of the eye as sort of like a telescope, you know, in a telescope, you have a strong lens that focuses the light, you know, right where you want it to. So you have that crisp, clear picture. And it creates a lot of heat as well at the same time. Sometimes you even use, you know, lenses and light to create sun to create fire, right? So same as that, our lens also creates and focuses the light onto the back of the eye, which is the macula, to give us that sharp vision. And so with kids and children, younger people, it's hypothesized that because they have such a clear lens, they have such clear optics, that they're actually more susceptible to having lots of sun rays causing damage and be focused in that central part of the vision and causing that damage to the photoreceptors.
And that makes a lot of sense if you compare that to an older person where the lens is going to be more yellow, which we call a cataract, and light can't necessarily get to the back of the eye as well. Once it does get to the back of the eye, it's not going to be as potent and as damaging. If somebody does get solar retinopathy, you explained scotoma, which for those who aren't in the field, that just means kind of like a blind spot in the center of your vision in this case. What's the typical course for solar retinopathy? It's typically pretty permanent, right?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, so it has been described in various different types. So some of the symptoms can be permanent. And unfortunately, the bad news is that there's really no definitive treatment. Some people have advocated for use of systemic steroids or steroids for the treatment of solar retinopathy, but really there's no definitive treatment. And in some cases with observation, there has been some resolution and a complete resolution, but there's also cases where there's permanent damage that patients experience, and some of these black spots or scotomas do persist lifelong.
And that's not to scare people. It's just to be honest with people that this is serious stuff. Photoreceptor damage is very tough to fix. So that's why there is a lot of panic on social media and in the news. But I want to unpack that panic a little bit, because for me, I guess this is where I get a little bit confused, and I'm sure you can help me out with this. When I hear about schools closing, I hear about people not going outside for work, my thought is, can't people just go outside and just not look at the sun, not look at the eclipse? Obviously, better to have the sunglasses on. But if you're just looking straight ahead and you're not staring at it, that's kind of the same as you walking around on a regular day, not staring at the sun. Is that accurate?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, there's nothing in particular about that day where the sun is more bright or there's more likelihood of damage to your eyes. So you going about your day-to-day activity is perfectly normal. I think the biggest concern is that people are so excited about this event, this extraordinary event, and so they're more likely to be staring at the sun and causing damage to their eyes by looking directly at the total solar eclipse, because this is what people are interested in wanting to see. And of course, you know, you don't have to fully step away from this experience or not have the opportunity to enjoy it. There's definitely safe ways of doing this. And there's a lot of information that's actually available on Government of Canada websites and other websites online that are trusted, such as the American Academy of Ophthalmology. But really, the most important thing is that you shouldn't look at the solar eclipse with a naked eye, looking through it with binoculars or telescopes, unless they have a proper filter or through a phone camera. None of these are going to protect your eyes, and even sunglasses. And really, the only type of things that are safe are using an eclipse glass, and these usually have a particular standard or an ISO number, which is ISO 12312-2, which suggests that these are regulated glasses that are meant for the solar eclipse, and they meet the standards for eye protection. And so you really want to make sure that those are the type of glasses you're using. Any sort of tinted glass won't be properly able to protect your eyes. And unfortunately, there has been some recent suggestion that there are companies that are releasing these glasses with the ISO number that I just listed, but they're not actually the proper type of glasses that meet the standard. So you really want to make sure you're getting your eclipse glasses from a reliable source. And also even taking them on and putting them on, you really want to make sure you're always looking down when you put your glasses on, your eclipse glasses, and even taking them off, you're looking down. So you always are avoiding that direct contact and direct sun gazing to avoid any accidental exposure to sun rays, and making sure, again, supervising children to make sure that they're also keeping their glasses on at all times, that they're looking down always to put them on and always looking down to take them off. Other options that are actually very interesting, and this may be hard to explain over a podcast, we can maybe include a link to this, but there's some other cool ways to do this where you can actually poke a small hole in a kind of thick piece of cardboard or paper. And then with your back to the solar eclipse, you can actually raise the paper so that it's actually directly facing the sun. And then you hold another piece of cardboard where you can, through that hole of the first one, view the shade and the light coming through the hole. And you can actually see indirectly of the moon and the sun and the eclipse through that. So that's another cool way. Wow. And it's a way to actually try doing with your kids. It's called a solar eclipse pinhole projector method. So it may be a fun way to even kind of try doing with your kids to avoid having them look at the solar eclipse directly.
Oh, that sounds fun. And that those are great recommendations and practical recommendations. And what I'm hearing there is, as long as you're cautious and following these guidelines, so to speak, and using the protective lens wear, then you're fine. And I wasn't trying to diminish before this idea of all these, well, maybe I am to an extent, all the hysteria that's going on, but it's important to understand that hysteria. Walking outside and looking down, you're not doing any damage. Now, if you think you are somebody who is not going to be able to contain yourself and you are going to start looking up, then don't do that. Stay indoors and don't go outside if you don't think you're going to be able to prevent yourself from doing it. But if you wear the glasses outside, you should be fine. And if you are outside and you are very certain for 10 seconds you need to walk outside to pick up the paper, you can do that looking down, not at the sun, and you're not going to cause damage. That's kind of correct.
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct. And of course, you know, if someone's anxious or you have a child that you think, you know, will be harder to supervise, there's always, you know, recordings of this that are going to be available on TV and YouTube. So that's another way of doing it as well. But yeah, the best way is to just make sure you're not directly sun gazing.
My last question is, I imagine a lot of people after the eclipse are going to be like, oh my God, my eyes, they feel a bit off right now. Should I go to the Emerge? And if somebody after the eclipse is concerned that something's going on with their vision, is there utility in going to the emergency room, or is there really nothing to be done in the acute phase? That's not to say you shouldn't see a doctor, but in terms of that fear you need to see, should people be rushing to the emergency room if they are worried that they did do something improper and they're noticing that something's off with their vision?
Yeah. So I think I would say, unfortunately, because there's no treatment for solar retinopathy, that's the unfortunate part. But if you're having symptoms in your vision, you really do want to make sure that that is due to solar retinopathy, or it could be due to another cause and it's just a coincidence. And so anytime you have any symptoms like development of new black spots, photosensitivity or sensitivity to light, distortion in your vision, difficulty in or changes in your color vision, your blurry vision, you should always seek an eye care provider outside of this solar eclipse phenomenon. And so if that does happen in the next few days after the solar eclipse, you really should see an eye care provider to make sure that it's either due to solar retinopathy or maybe due to another cause. And it's really important to get that diagnosed right away. And we currently have very good imaging techniques for our ophthalmologists listeners, but also our patients. You know, we do OCT imaging, But even OCT imaging, the typical B-scan OCT images that we do may not be sensitive enough to detect solar retinopathy, but we have on-fast OCT images, and we also have a new technology, or a technology that's been around for a little while now, called adaptive optics scanning light ophthalmoscopy, or for short AOSLO. And that's actually a really sensitive imaging technique for detecting changes in the photoreceptors. And what's really cool is that some of the patients that have kind of these distortions in their vision, and they've actually done drawings of the types of distortions they see after solar retinopathy, we're actually able to exactly match up the distortion that they're experiencing and the drawing of the patient that has done and their scotoma that they're experiencing to correspond it directly with the findings that we see on adaptive optics, where we see damage to the photoreceptor. So we're really at that stage where even to the kind of microstructural changes that happen in our photoreceptors in the retina, we're actually able to detect those and correspond those with the exact changes that the patient is experiencing in their symptoms. So we're very accurate in terms of making this diagnosis. It's really helpful for patients to actually know whether this is caused by solar retinopathy or something else. And for other things, there may actually be a treatment option available for them.
Wow. We take some of this technology for granted sometimes in ophthalmology, but it's really, really incredible when you talk about being able to outline specifically where that damage has occurred and how you can map that out to a patient's subjective drawing of a scotoma. I think what you said there was really, really smart. And that is probably one of the more important pieces of what we've talked about, how probably the bigger risk on this day, if somebody is concerned and they're saying, my vision's probably fine, is not dismissing that something else is going on with their eyes completely unrelated, because eye things happen all the time. And I didn't think about this before, but you might be inclined to say, my eyes are maybe a little bit off, but that's maybe a tad normal. Maybe it's in my head. But there are other things other than the solar eclipse, and there are people who unfortunately are going to experience other eye conditions on the day or the following days or the days following the eclipse. So don't ignore your symptoms if you're saying, everything's fine, I'm just being hyper cautious, because there might be something else going on that is treatable. Tina, do you have any final thoughts you want to share with people?
I would say, always take measures to protect your eyes. So on April 8th, of course, if you want to enjoy this extraordinary event that's going to happen, this extraordinary experience, just make sure you use proper viewing of the eclipse. Make sure you have the protective or the proper solar eclipse glasses or some of those other techniques that we talked about to make sure you protect your eyes. And again, make sure all year round, you're also protecting your eyes from dangers of UV light by wearing UV blocking sunglasses. And again, anytime that you experience any blurred vision, changes in your central vision, blind spots, altered color vision, and light sensitivity, it's always important to see an eye care provider.
One last question for you that's just coming to me now. In terms of driving on that day, because walking is an easier example that I used before, where it's easier to kind of walk looking down. But if you need to drive somewhere, should you not be driving if you don't have those special sunglasses? Or again, if you're not staring directly into the sun, are you okay? Or is it kind of an unknown where it might just be safer to not drive during that period?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. And I'm sure many people will think about that. So in theory, as long as you're not directly having to stare at the eclipse while driving, or you're headed directly in that direction and have to view it, your eyes should be safe, and it's safe for you to drive. But if you're worried and that's causing a level of concern for you, then it's fairly okay to also avoid driving that day. Of note, so there's actually been a recent study that's been done where they have actually linked an increase in the number of traffic fatalities and car accidents during total solar eclipses. And this was a study that was done in the US around the previous time of a total solar eclipse, and also a study that's being conducted in Canada as well, based at Sunnybrook. And so what they suggest actually is driving a lot of the increased traffic and increased fatalities from car crashes is due to reasons such as distracted driving, speeding to arrive to a destination on time, going and traveling in unfamiliar routes, and also increased traffic from more people driving that day or more tourists going a certain direction. And so that's also something to be very mindful of as well. So this is something that's been noted in the past, and it's also something that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is actually warning people about, is to be mindful of when driving that day, to not be distracted, to not be impaired, to always wear their seatbelt and make sure that, you know, they're not taking unfamiliar routes in busy traffic areas where there's lots of tourists looking at the total solar eclipse.
Well, really interesting, Tina. You've taught me a lot, and I'm sure you've taught the listeners a lot. I think there's a healthy balance here where you need to be concerned and you need to be taking the appropriate precautions. There doesn't need to be a mass hysteria either, as long as you take those precautions. And I'm delighted that you shared with the listeners all your knowledge about the eclipse and about solar retinopathy, and hopefully give people a little bit of ease as they enter this exciting day coming up next week. Thank you so much for joining me, Tina.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure chatting with you.
So for Dr. Tina Felfelli, ophthalmologist from the University of Toronto, I'm Zale Mednick. Have a great day.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.